take me out to the ball game.
What are you doing?
Did you know DirecTV has the most MLB games?
So, you're singing?
Yeah, they put your favorite teams front and center right when you turn it on. Buy me some cold cuts and flapjacks.
Those aren't even the words.
I'm allergic to peanuts.
Stream DirecTV, home of the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on sports networks. Availability varies by zip code and package. New customers. Service renews monthly unless you cancel. Choice package required. Restrictions apply.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
This is the best of the WIP Afternoon Show with Ike, Spike, and Fritz.
It is the WIP Afternoon Show with Ike, Spike, and Fritz. Phil's off tonight after taking 2 of 3 from the Dodgers. Before we looked at the season, we saw this Dodgers and then Braves back-to-back thing as a, you know, potentially facing the two best teams in the National League. Now, the first one, definitely for sure, the Braves now, I think, 1-8. So that matchup, you know, on paper doesn't look the way that we expected it to look, but in reality, still a big matchup every time you're facing a National League East team, especially the Braves, considering the talent that they have.
Hey, and when they're down, keep them down.
Absolutely. Make sure that let's end their season early. Joining us now to talk about the Phils and their 7-2 start is none other than NBC Sports Philly's own and WIP's own as well, Ben Davis. Ben, how are we feeling, brother?
Doing well. Doing well. Just down here in Atlanta running some numbers and listening to you boys. So, just ready to get going in this big series tomorrow.
Man, what numbers do you run?
Numbers? Numbers? Yeah. People still run numbers.
Whoa!
I don't have to do that anymore. No, I'm just looking at matchups. Runners in scoring position, all that kind of, you know.
I thought
the broadcast when I can.
You know, yeah, because you seem more like a manalytics guy than an analytics guy.
Yeah.
I thought we were talking to Benny Two Shoes over there or something that runs numbers for Paulie, you know, whatever.
So Benny
yes. So Ben, the big question of our show today is like, do the Phillies feel different to you this year compared to previous years, specifically in relation to what the mission was in terms of the things they needed to change? So I will ask you simply and open-ended, do they feel different to you?
They do feel different, and I think they had to finally have that moment where they look in the mirror and they say, you know what, I have to change. I think they did it individually. I think they've done it as a team, and I think they've reached the crossroads where they realize this window is shrinking, and they have to get it done. They have a really, really good ball club, Spike, and I think you witnessed that over the weekend. Every team has a couple flaws, and the Phillies have a couple flaws, but for the most part, this is a really well-constructed ball club. They're very professional about their business, and I do see a difference. And I think, you know, I think these guys are owning it. I think they're saying, you know what, we know why we've fallen short the last 3 years. We have to change. We have to get better. And I've seen them making those changes. I mean, looking case in point yesterday with the 11 walks. That's something that we haven't seen out of this ball club in recent years. But, you know, they're making those changes, and I'm liking what I'm seeing.
Yeah, wins are wins, Ben, so I won't take away anything from them in those first two series. But this past series was certainly an impressive series win going up against the Dodgers. Just your thoughts on sort of the overall series. Jesus was awesome Friday. Then we couldn't hit Saturday, even though the pitching was pretty decent. And then yesterday you had a tale of really two different – I don't know. They pitched well in some areas, and then they had to hit late. What'd you think about the overall series versus the Dodgers?
Well, a series win against one of the best ball clubs possibly ever constructed is big time, and that's what they were able to do. The loss that they had on Saturday, it was, you know, I was sitting in Mickey's game. Don't tell Mickey that, my 10-year-old, but watching the ball game on my phone, and I'm watching that stuff that Sasaki was throwing, and you know, T-Mac kept saying, oh, another splitter by Sasaki. Now, I thought they were like Sandy Koufax curveballs. They were nasty. I mean, that guy was on point. Of course, Dave Roberts came out and got him out early, but you know, Sasaki was pretty tough. So they ran up into, but yesterday, how they were able to manufacture these at-bats against Glasnow, wait him out, get him out after three innings. He only threw, 60 pitches, whatever it was. Got him the heck out of the ball game. I know it's just, you know, three games of 162, but I think that was a statement win. I think something they can build on and realize, hey, you know, we can play with anybody. I think they have that feeling down deep, but I think that was an affirmation for them moving forward that, hey, we got a really good ball club here. I think there's really no limit to the starting rotation and what they can do. We saw that. I mean, look what Sanchez was able to do against Betts and Ohtani yesterday. Arguably the best 1-2 punch in baseball, and he just, you know, eliminated them. And not many guys can do that. But nice. It was just a really good series win.
The change that we were talking about and the approach of the plate, is there a point? Because I would say it's probably easier to change for a short period of time than it is to stay committed to it for a while. What do you think is the ultimate test that they will stay committed to this sort of different sort of plate discipline that they've shown?
Well, I think the proof is in the pudding, Spike. I mean, these guys are realizing that, A, they're getting victories. You know, they're getting Ws. They're going in the left column, the right column. And that's what they want to do. So I think there's, you know, if you get a taste of something and it tastes really good and you're getting, you know, good positive feedback from it, you want to keep tasting that. I think these guys are getting, you know what, I can foul a pitch off to see another pitch. I can make sure I'm not just going out there and making an out on one pitch or two pitches. I'm making this pitcher work. We want to get this guy out of the ballgame. We want to get into that bullpen. And I think they're getting these results back, and it's good for them. I think they realize that there's the one reason they have fallen short in the last 3 years in the playoffs is because they have been, you know, unfortunately, consistently inconsistent with their offensive approach. One day, you know, you look back at 2 years ago with the Diamondback series there, I thought I would have bet one of my kids that they were going to go to the desert and just end it out there. And then the Diamondbacks end up coming back here and winning game 6-7 because the offensive approach fell short. And I think they realize that. I know these are veteran guys. These are guys that are getting paid a lot of money because of the numbers they have put up in the past. But they realize that they want ultimately, their ultimate goal is to win that world championship. And they can only do that if they get more consistent offensively.
Ben, as a former pitcher yourself, what are you seeing from, well, it's true. You know, what are you seeing from Jordan Romano? Romano has struggled. You know, they brought him in thinking maybe, I know Topper doesn't designate people the closer, but it seemed like he might have that. His velocity is down. Is there something that you're seeing in his delivery that might be the cause of that? He seems to be searching for that as well.
Yeah, I mean, we know that Father Time is undefeated. You know, he strung together some really good years. He had 100 saves over a 3-year span with the Blue Jays. I just think, you know, this is a different environment for him. It's a different market. He's on a team now with, you know, all-stars and MVPs, and maybe he's just trying a little bit too hard. The one thing, you know, Hugh Douglas always in the midday show, he always talks about, what does he say? Defense is a luxury. It's not a necessity. Well, I think with, you know, pitching, I think velocity is a luxury. It's not a necessity. He's not locating his fastball whatsoever. And, you know, everything stems. I don't care if you're Jamie Moyer throwing 84 miles an hour or you're Tom Glavine or Greg Maddux. Everything stems off that fastball. If you can locate the fastball, it is the best pitch in baseball. He's not able to locate. He's overthrowing. I think he's looking up at that radar gun and saying, man, I don't have it. Let me reach back for a little more. And all of a sudden, his command is gone. The best pitch in baseball, you can throw a fastball down and away if you can locate it. I don't care if it's 83 or 103. If you can locate that pitch, you're going to have success, and everything will work off of that. Then he starts to mix in his breaking ball. If his fastball command gets better, his breaking ball will look that more attractive to the hitters in the box, and then you're just going to get a lot more swings and misses. But right now, he's not in the zone. He doesn't have command of his pitches, and that's a big difference.
independent of that great analysis and that analogy, you drew a parallel with Hugh Douglas's terrible analogy about defense being a luxury. That is completely false, Ben. That is completely false. Just from a football standpoint, not from what you were saying, from Hugh Douglas's standpoint, though.
I got you.
Yeah, that phrase from Hugh did not age well after the Eagles won the Super Bowl with the number one defense in the NFL.
Right. I know.
Ben Davis with us. So Ben, your son Tague is off to a very hot start at Louisville as a baseball mm-hmm. player. We were talking about it before. Is he named after the lumber company, or is Tague a family name?
He is not. So,
okay.
Being 100% Irish, my wife is 50% Irish, 50% Italian. I wanted a strong Irish name. So all our kids are, we have Tague, Finley, Riley, and Mickey.
Okay.
Goodness.
So, but my one of my best friends in the world, his name is Thomas Patrick Tague, and I am the godfather to his second daughter, Taylor. Okay. And I've always liked his name, so we named our son Tague Patrick Davis. So we got our name from my buddy Tommy. It's his last name. And that's what we thought. It was a pretty cool Irish name.
Yeah, but if he gets drafted, I mean, it's already the lumber company, Tague Lumber. He's bringing the lumber exactly. to the yard. I mean, it also does work that way.
Exactly. Yeah, no, that's a very good analogy. But actually, the folks at Tague Lumber were very kind enough to send us some hoodies and stuff last year.
There you go.
So they took care of us.
I like the fact that you're trying to make up for your wife's 50% Italian by naming your children as Irish names as you can possibly find.
Well, I'm 100% Irish, right? My hometown sweetheart, Megan Patricia McGonigal, born on St. Patty's Day. I'm like, this is, and then I find out she's, half Italian, half Irish, so it's okay. We got two of our kids have that good olive skin. The other two have my skin, so.
All right, Ben. The series coming up against the Braves, we thought the series would be one thing leading up. I don't think anybody expected the Braves to be 1-8 leading in, but you would hope that the Phillies do not take any, don't. What's the word I'm looking for? You don't want to take them lightly, even given the start that they've had.
They won't. Yeah. And again, that gets back to the professionalism that they have. They know the Braves are 1-8, but they also know they're going up against Chris Sale tomorrow. And, this is a ball club that I think, it's still a really, really good ball club. They're still missing Ronald Acuna Jr., obviously Spencer Strider. Once they get those two guys back, it's a whole different animal. And, I obviously with the exception of Ohtani, who's obviously the greatest player in the world, if I had to start a baseball team with any particular player and he's 100% healthy, it would be Ronald Acuna Jr. Yeah. I just think he's that dynamic of a player. He can beat you in so many different ways. Once they get him back, it's going to be a different ball club. So they want to get these W's down here in Atlanta while these guys are still on the shelf.
All right, Ben. Well, we appreciate your time, man, and appreciate you clearing up the lumber thing.
No problem. That was important. I appreciate it.
All right. Thanks,
all right,
Ben.
Talk to you soon.
We appreciate it.
So,
there it is.
Ben Yami.
There it is. Cleared up. Jack was sure that he was named after the lumber company.
So Ben's in Atlanta before we get down there. Or did he go with the team?
They probably flew down today, I think.
Yeah.
Team went today?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
Good little day off in Atlanta.
Yeah, a little Magic City, right?
Hell no, that's why I said that.
They know Sale's on the mound tomorrow. They'd be screwing around.
No, they can't. It is the WIP Afternoon Show. Ike, Spike, and Fritz with you on your radio, on the free Odyssey app, and streaming live on YouTube. Today's show sponsored by Guided Door and Window. Get 20% off all windows and doors with no money down, up to 6 years to pay it off interest-free. Call Guided Door and Window today at 877-GO-GUIDA or visit goguida.com. We are about 2 weeks away from the NFL draft, and we thought, who better to join us leading up to the draft every week than our buddy Mike Mayock. Mike, we appreciate having you back.
Love being here. How you guys doing today?
What's up, Mike? Appreciate it, brother.
All good. Want to hear what your guys are thinking?
What we're thinking.
What we're thinking.
Dude, I don't know anything. Dude, that's what you're for, quite honestly. Do you love digging into draft stuff, just sort of like watching tape and thinking about how the teams are going to operate? Is this something that you find exciting, I guess?
You know what? When the Raiders fired me, I was like, I'm never going to look at another tape of a draft pick again. I'm done.
Wow.
And, of course, that lasted for about 5 months. And the next thing you know, I'm watching, you know, the top 100 players, and now I work as a consultant for some people from Sumer Sports and some other people. And it's I did the top 125 players plus or minus, which is an awful lot of tape work. But what is intriguing to me is just when you get into this time frame, I get goosebumps. I start thinking about like what's going on in the Eagles building right now. And, you know, they're finishing up the pro day circuit, even though there's still a few more. They've got the 30 visits going, which mean an awful lot more than people think. Mm-hmm. The coaches are starting to get ready for their OTAs, and their minds are kind of drifting away from the draft, but the scouts are trying to finalize their board. And it's just really exciting because it's just, you know, whoever handles their board correctly ends up winning the draft. And you might not know for a couple of years, but Howie Roseman and the Eagles have been the best in the business for the last several years.
Mike, great thing about having you on with us, man, is you understand this thing from both perspectives. You've done the breaking down of tapes and breaking down prospects from a network standpoint and from an analyst standpoint, but you've also done it where it really matters, which is in that front office. You just mentioned something about the draft board. I'm wondering, for every team, Eagles included, at this stage with 2 weeks left to go, how close are teams to sort of having their draft board finalized? In other words, is, you know, the Eagles are at the back of the draft, so I guess it may be a little harder, but you're 2 weeks away. Like, are you still in that evaluation period? Have you set the draft board up yet? Like, where are teams typically at 2 weeks out from the draft?
Yeah, that's a great question, Ike. And really what it comes down to is you've already pretty much stacked your board by position.
Okay.
And you've got a really good feel for that. Top, there might be a couple of questions that need to be answered at 30 visits or medical kind of things. But for the most part, from top to bottom by position, you've stacked your board. The harder part is the transition from by position to the overall ranking when you mix all the positions together. And what I mean by that is, like, you might have 10 players with an identical grade. Say you give them a 68, and it's going to be Howie's job and a couple of his top-ranking people that he trusts the most in that building over the next 10 days. They're basically going to sit down and say, you know what, the 68 corner we like a lot better than the 68 center, but that 68 edge, I'm going to put them right in between. And so you're really taking all the grades on your board, and you got to break them up so you have one final comprehensive board. And that's typically done, you know, plus or minus a week before the draft. And then the next level of is if you're picking in the top five, you have a pretty good idea who you're going to be picking from.
Yeah.
If you're picking 32, then you've got to be a little more nimble. And what I mean by that, and the good teams, the good organizations typically are drafting late, right? So, mm-hmm. Teams like Baltimore, Kansas City, Philadelphia, New England when Belichick was there. I got to understand back in the day how these guys thought of things. And, you know, the bottom line is that all of them sit there and go, I can't pick who's going to be there at 27 if I'm Baltimore or 32 if I'm Philly. So there's a group of four or five players that if you have to pick and stick, if you can't move up or back, you got at least five guys that you're good with any one of them. Any of the five we're good with, but one, at least one of them will be there. But you're also nimble enough to say, hell, you know, if somebody starts sliding, we're going to move up and go get them. I mean, that's who we are. That's why we're a good franchise.
Yeah.
And the flip side is you can't be afraid to move back. Yeah, you'll move back in the second round, pick up extra picks, and move on from there. And I think all the franchises that I just mentioned are not afraid to move up, move back, trade for existing players. I mean, and, you know, Howie Roseman personifies all that. He loves the trades. He loves moving up and back. You know, whether it's A.J. Brown or DeAndre Swift or what, you know, he does more of that than anybody in the league. And again, the Eagles are the best right now in the league at understanding their draft board.
talking to Mike Mayock about the NFL draft. I think that there was an interesting thing you just brought up about you can, it's very easy to rank guys within position group, but all of a sudden when you're not ranking in position group, it's not an apples to apples comparison. Right. So you could have a guy who's an 82 or something as a safety and a guy who's a 75 as an edge, but you value edge more than you value safety. And all of a sudden the math gets a little more difficult when you're actually figuring out which player to take when you're in the draft. That's an interesting dynamic I hadn't really considered before.
Yeah, and it's not even just as simple as, yeah, I like the edge over the safety because an edge is a more important position, but it's also what is the best fit for our team? Which player fits better? It's not just, you know, if you have an area of need and you have three players with the exact same grade, then it's pretty obvious. If you need an edge and one of those is an edge, you take right. that player, right?
Right.
But there's a lot of gray areas. And that's what I love about the nuance of setting that final board.
So, Mike, let me ask you this. And what you're doing now is almost all tape, right? But when you're a GM, there's more than just the tape that comes into like selecting a player. So when you look at performance in college, combine stuff, and then conversations with the player or people around the player to get sort of character, work ethic. You know, I guess it's impossible to get from you how you rank those things, but I guess I'm just sort of curious what you rank about above what else
how
those
more.
Fit together.
Yeah. And another great question. I mean, the bottom line, I think for most general managers is the tape is the holy grail. Mm. And everything else is a cross check. Mm. So when you go to the combine, and I always used to say to the guys at the NFL Network, and then when I got with the Raiders, and I used to drive them all crazy, I'd be like, look, fast guys run fast, slow guys run slow. It's only a story if the opposite occurs. Like, I don't care if you know, so-and-so ran 4.26. We all knew he was gonna. Mm-hmm. But if a wideout that we think is gonna run 4.65 runs 4.42, now we got to go back to the tape and reevaluate. Were we wrong, or did the kid just get a great start? Is he a track star? You know, there's so much that goes into all of those things that at this time of year, I just think this is the most fun when you're trying to put all those different pieces together and come up with that composite.
So the moving around within the draft, I'm going to bring up one specific instance from the Eagles where it didn't go well. And it felt like from the outside, they were panicking and they didn't know what to do. And it was the year they took Marcus Smith. They got to their pick and they traded back and it just seemed like they froze. What is going into the draft, what is the difference between a team that is good at maneuvering and a team that isn't good at maneuvering?
It's preparation and confidence and a chain of command that everybody understands. Yeah. You can't be sitting there looking for your owner or your head coach and your offensive line coach. You've got to be ready to go and pull a trigger. And if you need to talk to somebody quickly, that's fine. But in the first round, you get 10 minutes. You know, most of the rest of the round, you get significantly less. Mm-hmm. So I used to think that some teams panicked and you kind of wanted to hammer at them a little bit. You know, call them on the clock with 4 minutes left. Hey, you want to do this right. and see if they'd make a mistake. And it really comes down to preparation, both as far as knowing in advance. For instance, we mentioned first-round picks already, but you're talking every really good GM I've ever met knows that on, like, day one, here's what I'm trying to accomplish. Day two, second and third round, I've got one pick in each round. Okay, in each round, I've got these five players that are good for me. The worst-case scenario is that all five players are gone and you can't move up or back. That's worst-case scenario, right?
Yeah.
That rarely ever happens. It happened one year in New England, and they took an offensive lineman from Fresno State at 32 that nobody knew. He was supposed to be a third-round pick, and he ended up going to about 8 to 10 Pro Bowls. And the reason – I talked to Belichick later. The reason was he just knew he was going to be – he's like, my draft board was wiped out. We couldn't move either direction. What was important was at that moment we take a good, solid football player. That's all.
Yeah.
And I never forgot that.
most of us feel like the Eagles might, going into this draft, have to replace the talent they lost on defense. Right, so they number one defense from a year ago. Not many open spots on the offensive side. I guess maybe tight end, depending on what they do with Zach. Depending on what they do with Dallas Goedert. But there are a lot of holes to be filled on the defensive side. I'm looking at the edge and the corners. What are you hearing about? Like, what's the strength on the defensive side of the ball this year in the draft early? Is it D linemen? You got secondary players? What are you hearing is the strength at those positions?
Well, I think defensive tackle might be the deepest position in the draft, along with tight end. But at the end of the day, it doesn't mean you have to take one in the first round.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, if Walter Nolan or Derek Harmon's there at 32, you'd be like, awesome. That's really good. But Malachi Starks, what if he's there?
Mm.
Mykel Williams, the edge, what if he's there? I'm kind of with you, Ike, that both edge and corner in this particular draft, like I look at that corner pool and say I'd like to get one of the top guys and I'd rather not be taking my chances down in the third round.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that there are four corners that could potentially be there at 32. Siobhan Revell from East Carolina, Azariah Thomas from Florida State, Maxwell Hairston from Kentucky, and Trey Amos from Ole Miss. Out of that group of four, I'm guessing two will be there and at least one. So I don't know how Howie and the Eagles feel mm-hmm. about that group, but I look at it that way. Like that group, out of those four guys, I could find two I really like, and hopefully one of them would be there. I love Azariah Thomas higher than most people.
Okay.
But he's a press corner, and Vic Fangio would have to figure out whether or not he could play off in his system to the degree necessary.
Mm-hmm.
Trey Amos has played inside and outside. I love him, too. Maxwell Hairston.
That's my guy right there. I like him.
Let me tell you something. He might be the most he is the most gifted of that group. My only concern was I didn't think he was tough at all in tackling.
When you
dig deeper, he missed seven games last year with a shoulder, and if you go back to 23, his tape's a little better on the physical side. So I mean, he can run, he's fluid, he can cover.
Yeah,
this year he struggled getting guys on the ground, and that bothered me. But I give him a little bit of a pass because of the shoulder. But Ike, your eye is good. He's really gifted. Like he's gifted at a higher level than the 32nd pick.
Mike, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt there. Mike Mayock with us here. Mike, one more from me. I've read before, we talk about trading up, trading down, and I've seen the chart on the internet about the value of each particular pick.
Right.
And if you want to move up this many spots, it'll cost this. Is that something that general managers do look at, that chart of value, or is it more of a gut, you know, looking at it and saying it's worth that to me? Do you assign values to picks that way?
When you realize the amount of time you have to figure something out, you need a system.
Hmm.
And what you're referring to is the old Jimmy Johnson point grade system.
Yeah.
And you'd be amazed that all 32 teams used it or a variation of it, and they still do.
Wow.
And some of us even traded would send our point chart to another team.
Oh,
before
wow.
the draft.
Yeah.
And just say, hey, this is what we're using. Like, if we get on the clock, you know, what you're looking is, you're not always looking like win trades. You're looking for fair trade for both sides, because you only have a minute amount of time to finish the transaction. It's not like it's the off season and you got 3 months to make a deal. You're on the clock with 4 minutes. And I'll tell you, I had one of our analytics guys on a laptop sitting next to me. And when trade requests came in, he would put in all the point totals immediately and show me that, like, we were minus 102 points on a proposition by Washington. And I'd be like, that's bullshit. I mean, excuse me, that's BS.
We got you.
what we need to do is we need an extra, a fourth this year or a third next year to even this out, or no trade. And I know they're looking at their chart, and I'm looking at my chart, and it really does help facilitate trades when you're under time pressure.
That is so interesting, Mike. It's such a good thing to, now that you explain it, but sending, basically telling a team, here's what everything costs. You know, if we get deep in, here's how we value everything. Sending it to another team just would give you an advantage in speed, and I had never considered that. It's just the NFL draft, I've watched a lot of NBA drafts in my life, and I've watched both, but NBA is what I focused on. And it's different because it's only two rounds, and you really do have general managers trying to win trades in a way that is not quite the same here when you're dealing with this quantity of players and that little time, you know?
I'm not trying to say we're not trying to win trades, but if you really need to move up to get a player, what you're trying to do is make a fair trade for both sides so you can go get the guy you want. But if you know somebody's moving up for a quarterback, or you know who they've got, trust me, there are a lot of trades that, based on the trade chart, get done because one team has another over the barrel.
Right.
So it's not like we're saying every trade's fair. No. But if both sides can get to the place very quickly on a fair trade and they both get what they want, most of the time, that's fine.
What's it like to deal with Howie? In that, have you had much interaction with him in that way?
He's really good, and he and I go back a lot of years, man. And his reputation early in his career was kind of like, be careful. He's smarter than the rest of us, and he's going to try and win every trade. And I think as time has evolved, he is the smartest amongst all of us. And number two, what I loved about him is when you got him on the phone, he was trying proactively to make a deal. Like he wasn't trying to shoot down. If you had an original idea that he hadn't thought of, he'd take a step back and go, you know what, that might make some sense. Let me talk to Jeffrey. I'll call you right back. Or he might say, hey, Mike, have you thought about it this way? Can we get it done? And in the, I think, what year was it? 21, we were getting close to the trade deadline, and he and I were working on a potential deal that didn't happen. But I love dealing with him because if you called him at 2 in the morning or 9 at night or whatever, he was proactively trying to get a deal done as opposed to just trying to shoot stuff down. And I've got a lot of respect for him for everything he does in that building.
You said 21. I immediately started thinking, like, who did we want from the Raiders back in 21?
Well, that was the year Derek Carr had, what, the 85% completion percentage game against the Eagles?
Yeah. But I don't know what time in 21 this happened. I'm saying, I was just wondering, Mike, as soon as you said 21, my mind went like, well, we trying to get Antonio Brown? What were we doing? Yeah. I don't know who we were trying to get.
No, Antonio Brown was 19.
Oh, was he 19? Okay.
That was a disaster, but...
No, you don't have to tell me. I just started thinking as soon as you said I started thinking.
No, I'm not going to tell you, but the bottom line that game was in Vegas, and I told my wife before the game, I said, honey, if we ever want to move back to Philly, we got to win this game today. Because we both know Philly, and I can't go home without bragging rights.
All right, Mike. Well, we really appreciate it. This was enlightening, actually. Really interesting.
Yes,
we look forward
stuff,
to
good stuff.
We will talk to you next Wednesday and then talk to you before the draft. This was great, and we look forward to breaking down more specifically Eagles stuff the next time we talk to you.
100%. Look forward to it, boys.
All right,
thanks, Mike.
It's no surprise that facial hair is personal. It grows from your face. That's why Dollar Shave Club makes the razors, but you make the rules. Whether you're going smooth shaven or maintaining a beard, Dollar Shave Club offers shave and grooming products that are always high quality, but never overpriced. Dollar Shave Club products are now available everywhere. Or visit their site right now for 20% off $20 or more and get your products delivered right to your door. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/shaveup and use promo code SHAVEUP for 20% off $20 or more. And remember, whatever you shave, welcome to the club.
True North stores have Primo Eats and Pepsi brand products that are heavy on taste and light on your wallet. Right now, buy any Primo sandwich and add a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Handmade every day, Primo uses quality meats and cheeses. Complete the meal with a Pepsi. Grab any Primo sandwich and pair it with a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Get more with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your app store. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Nerds!
Today's episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. Want to travel like a savvy jet setter? No, that doesn't mean monogramming your passport. It means making smart decisions every step of your trip, which means knowing your options. Smart Travel unpacks the facts, like which booking sites actually save money, how to fly first class using points, and if that fancy travel card is a smart investment, all so you can save more on your next adventure. Follow Smart Travel from NerdWallet today and start traveling like a pro.
Hey everyone, quick shout out to Whole Foods Market. You know I'm all about eating fresh and finding quality ingredients, and that's exactly what Whole Foods delivers. Whether you're grabbing organic produce, high quality meats, or just a quick healthy snack, they've got you covered. Plus, they're all about sustainability and supporting local farmers, which I love. Next time you're grocery shopping, check them out. You'll taste the difference. Spring is the perfect time to refresh your table, and Whole Foods Market has everything you need. Hosting brunch? Picture this. Flaky, buttery quiche, crispy bacon, fresh berries, and of course, cold-pressed orange juice to brighten up your morning. And if you're in the mood for something fizzy, check out their seasonal Italian sodas. Berry Blend and Orange Hibiscus are total must-tries. So whether you're planning a casual get-together or a full-on feast, Whole Foods Market has you covered. Make Whole Foods Market your destination for all spring gatherings.
Leewood, it's time to turn heads, drop jaws, and feel unstoppable. Beaumont Health and Wellness brings you award-winning weight loss, hormone therapy, and advanced beauty treatments like body contouring, microneedling, and injectables. Sign up for our weight loss shots and get your first week free. Plus, receive a free body composition analysis and a free B12 shot to fire up your metabolism. Beaumont Health and Wellness, luxuriously bold, effortlessly sexy, undeniably you. Spots are limited. Call 913-261-9855 or book now at Beaumont Health KS.
It's a WIP afternoon show with Ike, Spike, and Fritz. It's Thursday at 3 o'clock. You know what that means. Shiel Kapadia of The Ringer, just like old times. Welcome back, Shiel.
I know. I feel like I should be getting ready with the game prediction. You know, we're going to be talking about, is the offense Jalen Hurts or Kellen Moore? But I guess it's a different year. It's the offseason, so I don't have to worry about all that.
Well, I got an important question first, Shiel.
Okay.
Are you okay with the intro music now?
Oh, yeah, it's different.
I'm okay because I figured you guys put thought into it and you wanted to save the other one for in-season hits only. So if we have a standing off-season one,
it's not coming back.
It's not coming back. I campaigned for this song for months.
Okay. Yeah, Spike, well, I like that. Spike got this song on here. It's not leaving yet.
Yeah, yeah. But I made the agreement. They were like, I think it was midway through the playoffs. I was like, why isn't the song coming? They're like, wait till after the playoffs. We got to win the Super Bowl first, which we did.
Okay.
And it has
Bryce
been.
Jack said that.
Yes, yeah. It has been a while. How old a guy are you now? It's just been a couple months. So you know, it, really, we haven't talked to you about the offseason at all. It has been even though the Eagles have explained it and analysts have explained it, it has been sort of a stunning offseason for the Eagles, given the number of players that they've lost and the fact that they haven't really replaced any of them in a player-for-player sort of way. They've signed a bunch of guys. They've signed a bunch of guys, but all those guys seem like, you know, lottery tickets in some way.
Yeah, I would agree with that. A bunch of dart throws. I think going into the offseason, like you said, we all sort of knew, all right, they're going to lose some guys, but you wondered, all right, is there a big trade up their sleeve? Is there, hey, just one signing that they're going to make? And instead of that, you know, you're able to bring Zach Bond back. But I think, honestly, the most stunning move of the offseason was probably the Chauncey Gardner-Johnson trade. I don't think anyone was really predicting them to go to those lengths to save a little money and reshape their defense. So it's not panic time. They're still the favorites to win the Super Bowl if you look at the sports books. But I think it makes this draft probably maybe even more important than we thought it was going to be a few months ago.
Well, and that's sort of my question on this is, do you go into this draft? Do you think the Eagles are going into this draft saying we need like multiple starters out of this draft? Because they lose Sweat. They lose Milton Williams, who wasn't a starter, but, you know, for all intents and purposes, starter type snaps. They lose Slay. They lose CJ GJ, who you mentioned. N'Kobe Dean's not going to be there when the season starts. They lose Becton. Do you think they go into this draft thinking we have to get like a number of real true contributors to this year's team?
I think the way Howie Roseman looks at it is he tries to put together a roster that, hey, if you need to play a game right now, 2 weeks before the draft, you can go line up and you have guys, some guys you're not sure of, but you have enough guys to put out there where you feel okay about it. In other words, you sort of set the floor the best you can at every position. And then you go into the draft and you say, hey, if we can draft over some of those guys we're not sure about, let's go ahead and do that. So, yeah, I think ideally if they could get two starters out of this draft and it could be as fruitful as last year's draft was, they would love to do that. Now, last year's draft doesn't always happen, so I think that's going to be challenging. What to me is most interesting is that this is a team coming off a Super Bowl victory, and there are probably like eight spots where you could say they could draft someone over a guy who's there right now. You know, offensively, you could certainly say it at right guard. You could maybe say it about tight end if they move on from Dallas Goedert. You could say it about wide receiver three with Jahan Dotson. And then defensively, you could say it on pretty much every level. I mean, you could draft a defensive tackle who starts right away, an edge rusher, a linebacker, a safety, a corner. So to me, that's the unusual part where you say, no, you don't have to necessarily force a position and say, we got to get this guy because he can play right away. At the same time, when we get to the summer and August in training camp, I do think there are going to be a lot of spots up for grabs. And they showed us last year, specifically on defense, that they're willing to play the rookies right away if those guys show that they're capable.
Shea, what do you think the likelihood of? Because I mean, we all know they need help on defense, and there are a lot more holes to fill there, like you said, at all three levels. But you mentioned a position that I think would catch some people off guard, although it would make some others excited. And I'm thinking about that tight end position. 32 is a good spot. It's almost like a high second round pick for a tight end because it's late in the first round. I'm wondering, you know, you think the Eagles would consider a tight end in that first round? And I know Tyler Warren is up there as a higher draft pick. A, would you go up to get him? Or B, is there a tight end you could see somewhere sort of late in there in that first round that the Eagles could be interested in?
It's possible. I think more likely might be day two, but like you said, if you trade back a little bit, you know, it could still be a top 50 pick. I mean, if you're looking at the strength of this draft, I think tight end is right up there with almost any position. Now, a guy like Tyler Warren from Penn State, there's the Michigan kid, Colston Loveland. I think those guys are probably going to be taken at a spot where it's kind of too high for you to even trade up because you're going to have to give up quite a bit. I mean, I think those guys could very well go in like the top 20 there. So I think more likely than not, you say, hey, who are some of these guys on day two? You know, there's a tight end out of Miami who is really interesting, where whenever you see the Cam Ward highlights, who's going to go number one overall, he's the guy that he's throwing to. So, yeah, usually in the past, you know, they had Brent Celek and they drafted Zach Ertz early. They didn't have to think about it. It wasn't an emergency situation. They had Zach Ertz. They drafted Dallas Goedert. They didn't wait till Zach Ertz was off the team. Well, this is a sort of different situation where, and again, Goddard's still on the team, so who knows how that plays out. Mm-hmm. But if Goddard ends up not being on the team, then yeah, I think that's a position where second round, third round, you draft a guy who you really like and hope that he can come in and play right away.
Now, when you brought up, you mentioned moving up to somewhere in the 20s would be a little bit too rich. Now, you think that's, are you saying that's too rich for a tight end? Or do you think that's what it would cost to move up in the 20s for another player would be too rich for the Eagles? Believe the Eagles would move up if there was a defensive end or maybe a defensive tackle they wanted in the 20s somewhere?
I think if there's a pass rusher who they love and that guy starts to fall, that would be the position. You know, I still think they care about positional value in the draft, and you look at how the defense is built and the guys they lost. Yeah, I think that would be the position where you say, hey, they're going to make a big swing. And I don't know who the player would be. You know, I think a lot of those guys could go early. And then, you know, some of them might be available. What they like to do or what they've done in past years is it's kind of a small trade up where you're going up, you know, two, three, four, five spots, and then you try to get back draft picks in the second or third round. So I think that's probably more likely given some of the holes that they need to fill. But yeah, if you told me, hey, they're going to make a big swing in the first round, I would think the position would be either edge rusher or defensive tackle.
You know, the trading, especially if you're trading other picks from this year, I'm a big move-up guy, but man, they need so many players. I've been, and most people here haven't been, and in Philadelphia, everybody's very happy with the Super Bowl, and this happened after the last one, where every move they make is it must be the right thing. They've lost so many players, And the draft is, I know they've been successful recently, but it's not, the draft isn't a thing where you can count on being as successful as they've been. And I just sort of, I've put myself in the camp of more picks better than less picks. Take more players rather than less players. And the move up, that the cost to get into the teens or something like that seems so high from a draft capital standpoint, it makes me a little nervous.
Yeah, I think you're right, especially in this draft. You know, it's not even the teams that are picking in the top 10. You look at some of these guys and you're like, wait, these are the guys going in the top 10 this year? This guy has an injury history. This guy's undersized. It's really not one of those drafts where you say, all right, there are a bunch of guys you could say, hey, if they slip, this is the time to trade off. So I think you're right about that. You know, they've talked about, hey, we have to sign a bunch of these rookies, or not rookies, but guys we've drafted in the last 3 years. They're going to become very expensive. Well, what's the way to supplement those guys on the roster? It's to have new guys on rookie contracts. What's the best way to do that? You have a lot of picks. You know, you're not going to hit on all of them. And you hope that you can find enough success stories that you're able to supplement the roster that way.
Shiel, have you done a mock, and is there a player, let's say that the Eagles are picking 32, around 32, is there somebody that you have sort of dialed in on and who you think might be a good fit, who might be there when they're picking?
Yeah, there are a couple of guys who I kind of have my eye on. One of them is Walter Nolan, the defensive tackle out of Ole Miss, like we just talked about.
Andrew,
that is an area that they could absolutely address. And so he's somebody who, you know, it was kind of hit or miss a little bit last year. You look at his 10 best plays and you say, wow, this guy should be a top 15 pick. And then you watch a little bit more and you say, okay, I could see it's not as consistent. But he's a guy, if you're swinging for upside and say, hey, the best version of this guy could be a really special player, I think he would really interest them. So he's a guy I have an eye on there to see if he falls. And then the other one, you go back to the Georgia well, and I don't think it's the ideal position they would like to draft, but there's a safety from Georgia named Malachi Starks, who to me seems like a really clean prospect who could come in, replace Chauncey Gardner-Johnson right away, high IQ type player, played as a freshman right away at Georgia, a three-year starter who I think is a really good player. So just looking at it, hey, who could be there, who could interest them, those are two of the guys that I kind of had my eye on.
Yeah, it should be an interesting night for the Eagles. Our big nightmare, as it is every draft when they're picking lower, is that we do this huge draft show on draft night and they trade out of the first round and we just go we go home with our hands in our pockets.
That's right. Last time they won the Super Bowl, right? Dallas Goedert in the second round.
Yep.
They trade out of 32. Lamar Jackson goes 32. And quite honestly, that's something to keep an eye on. You know, the quarterbacks are not great in this draft. However, if you're a team that likes one of these quarterbacks and they're still available at 32, you're incentivized to trade into the first round because it gives you that fifth-year option where now all of a sudden you have that quarterback for an extra year. If he hits, he's going to be cheaper for you on the fifth year, whereas if you're a second or third round pick, you only have him under contract for 4 years. So that's always something to keep an eye on when you have the 32nd overall pick in the first round is, hey, one of these quarterbacks, does a team fall in love and say, hey, we want to get back up there into the first round, and now you trade back and you maybe get another extra pick on day two. Now, for content for you guys doing the big draft show, I hope that doesn't happen. But from an Eagles perspective, it's something to keep an eye on for sure.
Listen, I wouldn't mind if the Giants wanted to get up there to 32 to get Jalen Milroe in that first round.
And we get something out of that.
And we get something out of that, And the Eagles give the Giants a chance to take Jalen Milroe in the first round.
Yeah, it could make sense. And in some of these, Shedeur Sanders, I don't think is going to be there at 32, but there's some uncertainty with basically every quarterback other than Cam Ward. There's the quarterback from Ole Miss, Jackson Dart.
Yep.
You look at some of the draft analysts out there, they think he's going to go in the first round, where a month ago, no one would have said he's going in the first round. So this always happens with quarterbacks. Teams start to get desperate. The quarterbacks get pushed up the board a little bit, and you might have an opportunity to capitalize on that if you're a team like the Eagles that already has your quarterback in place.
All right, Shiel. You can read Shiel at The Ringer or listen to the Philly Special podcast wherever you get your podcast. We appreciate it, buddy.
Appreciate it, brother.
All right, guys. Talk to you soon. Take care.
There is Shiel Kapadia of The Ringer. Should be fun Thursday night. I'm excited.
I trade with the Giants and tax them even more.
Well, and the quarterback stinks too.
Yeah, exactly. Like, yeah, I'm not even afraid of the quarterback. That's why I'd go in and do it.
Yeah. Yep. By the way, it's clear Shields been listening to the show, just taking all of OK Andrews' points.
Unbelievable.
A little disappointing.
Unbelievable.
He just legitimized OK Andrews.
Yeah. Our draft expert, OK Andrews. I'm sure right. We'll hear from him later. Let's get to that top five at five, Jack.
So as always, we're always monitoring the morning show, hearing what they're saying. And the morning show had a lot of ridiculous. It's only Thursday, but in 4 days,
this week.
Are you trying to win the belt
as a show?
As a show,
We have the belt as a show. Everyone, everyone knows that. So what I have for you is the five most ridiculous things I heard on the morning show this week. Number five, a tasty cake. Dom brought this up last segment, but listen to just. Hey, they're starting to get a little personal with some of the shots on the morning show.
None of these guys believe in me. Rhea is rooting for me.
I have no belief in you.
100%.
I'm sorry.
This is so zero. Oh,
I don't have that much belief in Jack Fritz, but you know.
So that shows you how low you think of me.
You but guys are down there. Your bar is like so low. It's beneath. Yeah. It's submerged. It's buried.
Okay. Well,
I
hope it goes better than
a buried bar.
I hope it goes better for you than I expect.
I hope so
Joe
too.
Joe can but psychologically destroy Fritz.
Rich, well, that's my thing.
That might be true.
I agree with that, Rhea.
Yep.
Because there's a big.
I think it can be mentally beat.
There's a big baby thing in there.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah. Hold on.
Yeah, very sensitive sort.
Very sensitive, yes.
Yep. Where's DK coming from? DK's out of control.
DK got in there with a thin can shot.
John, that is his vulnerability.
That's all part of the competition, isn't it?
A glint of hope that this.
No, I already knew it.
Wow, there's a lot there, Fritz.
Well.
I know.
You are a sensitive guy.
But listen, I think we're all sensitive. Also, I'm the one on the show who makes fun of whenever you guys get all emotional. I don't, you know, with the appreciate you.
Oh.
I mean, everyone else is crying. They make everyone cry. And again, where's the camera and this toughness? You know, he's acting like he's been. Now, I don't like that Rube was able to smell it. Maybe that's why he didn't draft me back in 2012. You know what I mean? I don't like that he could. Listen. I'm obviously, you know, I'm a little softy, you know.
Yeah.
But I don't like that people can like smell it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, you got to toughen up. You got to start. This is the only thing that this is the my only worry with this thing is that you're not like you work a lot, but you're not like a like what I want. Is the 8 minute mile, Fritz? I want you to treat this like the camera's an actual.
Yeah, we're
threat.
Trying to get you locked in.
Yeah, I want you to really prepare, and I'm worried that you're just going to try to like drift in there on. I'm a much better athlete than him anyway,
right.
And he's really going to prepare, and you have to destroy him.
But I don't think he's really going to prepare.
I think he is.
I don't think he is. There's more on this tape that we'll get to that would suggest that maybe I'm in the clear there.
I just think you got to prepare.
Yeah. The fourth most ridiculous thing I heard on the morning show this week is, once again, how much money are we paying the camera? I mean, listen to this hoity-toityness from the morning show host.
So anyway,
you don't know what the panini you were eating for breakfast was?
I did not know what it was.
How is that possible?
I mean, it was, I don't,
you
roast
don't
beef,
know what you're
steak,
eating
was,
for breakfast?
It was something in there. Roast
did you
beef.
Buy it?
I did, but I did not request it.
Hold on. How does that work?
I know.
You that bought would... food. You didn't know what it was, but you ate it.
I got a chef that drops food off, and I take whatever is given.
No. That's pretty
personal chef.
That's
it.
As highfalutin as highfalutin gets.
I didn't want to say that.
Well, look,
he's got a chef.
Look, this guy, you know, I don't have kids, but I do have a wife and have a house. But this guy is not married, living in an apartment.
Yeah.
That he doesn't even, you know, that he gets his girlfriend to clean or whatever. No disrespect to her. Mom does the laundry.
Yeah. He's kind of like an 18-year-old, just happens to be a 46-year-old.
That's a chef that drops off food.
Well, he obviously doesn't cook. So it's probably one of these people that prepares his meals.
Well, so. If he has somebody preparing healthy meals for him,
right.
Why does he look
like that
the way he does?
Well, did we say they were healthy meals or they're just meals?
I think that's where it started in somebody getting him healthy meals because he's having all those stomach issues.
Right.
But he doesn't, forgetting about like the general shape of him, he like even his color.
is like sort of like sickly.
Yeah. He looks sickly.
Yeah.
All the time.
He looks like from Scooby-Doo. The
Shaggy.
Shaggy. He's got like a sort of, you know, like he's been in the basement for days and weeks. That's the sort of color that's going on with him.
He was a hostage?
Yeah.
Man. Wow.
Yeah, he looks like he was held hostage.
That sounds healthy. Speaking of healthy, he also detailed his wild and crazy Saturday night when he tried to go to McDonald's at 11:30 at night.
McDonald's
11:30 at night. Listen to this back and forth.
I have never before seen what I saw Saturday night. I don't know the exact time. Maybe 11:30, 11:15. I don't know what it was. There were at least 20 cars in the parking lot. I would tell you probably 30.
Was your car one of them?
Yes, but I never got to the front of the line. So I know that part's not good, John. I acknowledge that.
But what were you doing, man?
I wanted to eat McDonald's.
Too busy.
Well, no, I wasn't going
to
wait for...
You eat McDonald's at like 11:30 at night.
It's not smart. I get that. Yeah. I acknowledge that. I see to the court my
culpability.
Isn't
there a college right there?
Well, there is, but so. I'm telling you, it was like 30 cars, and they were lined up. And then there were others waiting, and then there were others trying to weave their way into the line, and then, like, me and Amy are trying to, with an Uber driver, trying to weave our way through to get out the other side.
You had an Uber go to McDonald's?
Yes.
Oh, my God. It keeps getting worse. Yes. It's like everything you say is worse.
Well,
you flip
the guy an extra $5 or $10, and you get your Mickey D's.
This is unbelievable.
But I'm just telling you, if you guys saw this line, you would be like, something done add up here.
Huh.
It just...
That is strange.
Was it a high school kid, like, people getting together?
I don't know, but what, again... Do you feel guilty?
Yes.
Okay.
But I am picking it up,
well,
John.
What is Amy doing? By the way, Amy, driving? No, so, okay, you're in the Uber. Is Amy...
Complicit is the word you're looking for. Complicit,
right.
Yes.
Is she reprimanding you or trying to talk you out of this decision?
Well,
right.
Listen, when I want food late night, I'm
going to
get food late night.
What were you
late
going
night.
To
Amy's
get?
Done a poor job.
I don't know. But then I got
was
it.
Was going to get
two
something?
I got
like
it for breakfast the next morning. Delivery.
Hold you on. Got McDonald's delivered.
Yeah.
Well, that was my first question.
Yeah, why wouldn't you just call
Uber Eats or something?
Yeah, or DoorDash or whatever.
And like, but was he going to the McDonald's near Temple? That's
near,
the only one I can
Nova.
Think of.
Oh, Nova.
Nova.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, near Nova.
Yeah, it's college students. What does he think is going on at that time of night?
But why are you taking an Uber? Like, I don't understand why you don't just get it delivered.
Unless he was Ubering home from somewhere.
And then they stopped on the way?
Yeah, but even that... Like, you know, I would know, even I think Fritz would know, around our campus, the restaurants at that time of night are filled with college students.
The other thing
they're either going there after leaving the bar or they're powering up before they go to the bar. You know what I mean? Put something on your stomach before you go to the bar and drink.
Well, and how does Mr. You know, sense of stomach over there, how is he metabolizing McDonald's at 11:30 at night and then... eating, then taking the Uber home, I'd have kicked him right out of my Uber at that moment.
And then to come back.
Or put on a diaper.
And still order it in the morning.
Yeah. Ugh.
This is the competition. Again, this is what I'm dealing with.
If it's not the fries, I'm good on McDonald's.
Yeah. I haven't had it.
Yeah, McDonald's fries are still good.
Yeah.
I used to love the breakfast.
The second most ridiculous.
I don't mind the breakfast.
Yeah, breakfast is good. Yeah. Little McGriddle. Yeah. The second most ridiculous thing I heard on the morning show this week is... Now, Richie, seems like his dad was a little tough on him, you know?
Oh, yeah.
So, this happened this morning, and Richie, listen to the way he weighed himself and where he did it. Here's the back and forth.
You got bigger, right? Am I remembering this right?
Well, I kept eating the way I always ate. I was no longer exercising the way I wanted to, but I was still eating the way I always ate. And, oh, lo and behold, now I can drink beer and not have to worry about it the next day? Oh, this is great. So that's a lot of extra calories. And suddenly, within a year of retiring, my dad told me, you look disgusting. My dad said to me, look at yourself in the mirror. You're gigantic. You should be embarrassed. You must weigh 300 pounds. I was like, are you kidding me? Come on, Dad. That's a little harsh.
Right.
And then I stepped on the scale at the airport that they weigh the bags on the next time. I was picking
Did you say, can I step on the scale here?
I didn't ask.
You just
I just
did
stepped
it.
On
you
it. And then
crazy.
I was like, you know what? Oh, it says 305. There's no way that's right. They calibrate it heavy just so everyone has to pay extra.
Wow.
305, man.
Yeah, I mentioned yesterday. I think it was on yesterday's show I mentioned that he said he was much bigger after the
FFR. Now, John played at like 240.
But that was big.
No, that's, I mean, hell yeah. I mean, that's the fullbacks look like back in those days, 240, 250. So that's a lot of weight he put on.
A lot of weight.
That's a lot of weight he put on.
Well, he said the other thing that he went through, I think he's told this on the air, is that when he, you know, your body goes through a lot of, when you play that position, like a lot of pain.
Yeah,
he said he wasn't using the stuff to get rid of the pain anymore.
Oh, he didn't do the Toradol and all that stuff?
All that stuff once he was retired. Right. So, like, even moving around was, like, he was in pain all the time, too. It sounded terrible.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, we talk about football being like a damn car wreck and it's a crash course. Well, he played the position that it actually was that the majority every play.
Every play.
Yeah.
Yeah, every play.
I just wish I could envision him just jumping on the scale at the airport.
Yes.
Without even asking.
It's a very Richie thing to do.
It's definitely a Richie thing.
And now he's built like a slot receiver. So it all. Yes. It all
man, he looks good now.
Yeah.
He does. Now, number one, the most ridiculous thing I heard on the morning show this week is actually something that Ike heard. And again, they live on a different planet. I'm not sure what planet it is, but apparently no one eats fried chicken sandwiches anymore.
You don't see fried chicken much anymore, and that's a health thing. But you don't see, you know, that was a staple. You know, growing up, fried chicken.
I see, well, you're right about the fried chicken, though. Man, it was like an art form. I remember the first time I had fried chicken as a small child.
What?
I couldn't imagine anything tasting better than that.
It's glorious.
I couldn't believe it. It was so, it was hot and juicy, and holy cow, this explosion of
flavor.
And
the crunch. And the...
Why can't I eat that for every meal, Mom and Dad?
You're still there.
There's this place in Camp Hill, Pennsylvania called Red Barn. And it hasn't been there since 1980, but it was delicious.
The reason you can't have it every meal is you'd be dead by now.
Oh, totally. No doubt.
What?
Does Richie think that they got rid of that place in 80 and there's no more fried chicken?
The last place to ever serve fried chicken.
First of all, from fried chicken sandwich perspective, we just had that Popeyes
thing.
We had
a craze over it, yes.
The Wendy's and the Popeyes.
Yes, during COVID.
Yeah, it was insane. That was just a couple of years ago.
Yep.
And Ike's a TikToksman like me. I see people eating fried chicken on TikTok
all the time.
And now those Korean fried chicken places are all over the place now, and that's a big thing. What world are they in that fried chicken is not a thing anymore?
Yeah.
We're talking about the same guy, by the way, who didn't know how many wings were on a chicken. Is that
that's true. That is,
didn't know whether there were four wings or two wings on a chicken.
Well, and the pillar of health, you know, talking about.
You'd be dead.
Yeah.
If you ate fried chicken.
Dude, there's fried chicken all over the place.
All over the place,
you don't
brother.
See it anymore.
Yeah,
you don't see fried chicken anymore. It's one of the most like popular sandwiches.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
What's
wrong with
those
that was
guys?
Interesting listening to them talk about fried chicken like it was some sort of foreign meal.
Yes.
That you can't find.
Do you
anywhere.
Remember? It's like us talking about a show like Taxi.
Yeah.
You know the show from the 1980s. Yes. Like, do you remember fried chicken? Oh, it was so good.
Oh man. That's a weird group of guys, man.
Really weird.
Yeah, it is, man.
And Rhea has been infected by them, obviously, as well. What the hell's going on?
She tries to maintain the sanity on the show, but you're right. I think she may have been infected by those guys.
Street Easy knows former New Yorkers never stop talking about how much they miss living in NYC.
Life used to feel like a movie, but since we left and bought a house, it's like living in a DIY home repair video.
When it's time to buy, let Street Easy connect you with the right agent you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. Street Easy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
In 2009, 3 days before Halloween, a grisly crime stunned the seaport town of Anacortes, Washington.
I can only describe it as evil.
From 48 Hours, this is Train to Kill, the dog trainer, the heiress, and the bodyguard.
He couldn't control his obsession.
Who was the hunter and who was the hunted? Follow and listen to Train to Kill on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.